This is special coverage about the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm news director Sarah Bohannon. Today we'll get the latest local and state news on COVID-19, and then we'll hear from Congressman Doug LaMalfa, who represents California's 1st District. He'll talk about his views on the government's response to the pandemic, what government's role should be, and his thoughts on reopening the economy. If you have questions or story ideas for this show, let us know on our message line, 433-9216, or go to our website, mynspr.org. For Monday, April 20th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. First, some news.
For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert. The number of COVID-19 cases in California has risen beyond 30,000, with fatalities now at 1,166. That's according to the most recent figures released Sunday. Total cases struck 30,333, an increase of 39% over a week ago. The number of cases is rising more slowly, though, which may be reflective of the scarcity of testing rather than proof that the pandemic is nearing a plateau. The number of deaths is rising at a much sharper clip. It was up 79% over the same time a week ago. As concerning as that figure is, it's an improvement. Early last week, deaths were doubling every 7 days. Governor Gavin Newsom today acknowledged that people are frustrated, but said relaxing restrictions would send cases spiking.
The worst mistake we can make is making a precipitous decision based on politics and frustration that puts people's lives at risk and ultimately sets back the cause of economic growth and economic recovery.
He said certain countries, including the island nation of Singapore, have had to reinstate restrictions after a second wave of infection formed. The number of confirmed cases in the North State broke into triple digits, reaching 101, according to the latest figures available Monday afternoon. The number of North State deaths remains at 7. Among the 5 counties providing data about how patients are doing after being diagnosed, 64% of patients have reportedly recovered, while 9.4% have died. Shasta and Sutter counties continue reporting the most cases, with 26 each. Butte and Yuba counties each report 16, Siskiyou 5, Glenn and Plumas County 4 each, Colusa 3, and Tehama 1. Both Lassen and Trinity counties report no cases. Volunteers delivering food to those living in areas burned by the campfire will receive $15,000 to keep the effort going through the COVID-19 crisis. The North Valley Community Foundation, Feather River Hospital Foundation, and Paradise Rotary each chipped in. Organizers hope to begin deliveries Wednesday. To sign up, visit loveparadise.net, email lovedelivers@paradiseadventist.org, or call 877-4454. Officials say they've moved 98 older Butte County homeless people off the streets and into hotel or motel rooms to reduce the risk of infection. That's according to the Health and Human Services Department. The rooms are being paid for through the governor's Project Room Key, aimed at people who are homeless and either elderly or suffering from chronic or underlying health problems. A pivotal hearing in Butte County's case against Pacific Gas and Electric Company over the campfire has been postponed a month due to the virus. A planned arraignment, plea deal, and sentencing for the company set for later this month has been pushed back to May 26th, according to Mike Ramsey, Butte County's district attorney. For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert.
This is special coverage on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. For more than a month, coronavirus has been all-consuming. It's knocked just about everything else from the headlines, upended commerce, education, and normal daily life. As cases soared in Europe and then exploded in the largest city in the United States, disruption came to everyday routines of Californians and others around the nation. Rather than accrediting extreme prevention efforts to slowing transmission, lower-than-predicted case rates and deaths are being interpreted by some as proof the warnings about this virus are overblown. Protests are now popping up in some states demanding an end to social distancing and reopening of non-essential businesses. And that includes California, where unmasked demonstrators Monday stood together, often closer than 6 feet apart, at the Capitol to protest the state's stay-at-home orders. Many signs admonished the governor and praised the president, stating things like, no new normal, hands off my civil rights, paychecks are essential, poverty kills millions, and open California now.
Open it up! Open up the state! Open the state! Come on! We need to work!
Last Thursday, before that protest, NSPR's Mark Albert spoke with Republican Congressman Doug LaMalfa, representative for California's 1st District, for a wide-open conversation about the virus, the government's role in responding to it, and when he's hoping to see California's economy reopen. Mark began the conversation by asking LaMalfa's perspective on the response here in the North State.
First, let me say how well most people have been at doing what needs to be done. And, you know, they've been pretty patient, I think, with what's been asked of them on the social distancing and with, you know, the ability for, you know, me on the federal side, the federal government's trying to get this up to speed with this gigantic task of, you know, SBA having to do so much and, you know, getting the Paycheck Protection Program and the EIDL and so much just getting off the ground in 3 weeks. And yes, there's still plenty of big issues, and we're trying to knock them down and help our folks that are calling us. So as far as how are people responding, you know, the electeds, I think everybody's doing pretty well. I think everybody recognizes the size of the problem, but they also recognize that we in rural California, it looks a little different for us than it does in the urban areas where people live practically on top of each other. So you see some of the frustration coming out on not being able to put your boat on the lake or be able to go fishing, you know, things that are pretty wide open spaces that don't make a lot of sense to them. They get, you know, standing in line, you know, if you're going to the market 6 feet apart, wear your mask, wash frequently, they get all that. But they don't get how some levels of government are coming in and telling them to do what they think are ridiculous measures beyond what seems sensible to them. And I think a lot of people really have a sense of what seems right, what isn't right, especially with a little bit of education on what's going on. So it's a mixed bag, but I think as far as our elected, doing pretty good. Some of the bureaucracies are taking it a little too far. We're seeing that with state level, you know, whether it's our state or some other states that are just getting a little too picky on things that really aren't hurting anybody.
In terms of being able to deliver the numbers of tests, the amount of tests, the availability of tests or personal protective equipment and masks and others, and prioritizing where it needs to go and making sure that the logistics are equitable, are they doing a good job locally?
Well, that comes down to supply chain there, and that comes down to the availability of this equipment and material to begin with. And that is the big challenge here, because, you know, and I'm not going to point fingers at anybody because that isn't really what's needed right now. But, you know, in some cases, maybe more of it should have been kept in the stockpiles at the state level or at the federal level. You know, I think the federal level, they've gotten out a lot of what they have. But that's neither here nor there, because decisions are made based on what looks realistic on budgets, on fiscal, and on perceived threats. I think the takeaway for anybody at state level or federal level is that we're going to have to lay in a little more stockpile supplies, you know, keep them rotated, keep them fresh, whatever, for more events like this. And, yeah, we know that costs money. It's just sitting there. It's like, you know, money not sitting in a bank account or sending in investment. It's something that you have to have.
I mean, it's the kind of spending that's, you know, hard to rationalize when, you know, oh, we need these things to sit on the shelf for a few years as opposed to taking care of some other urgent need. But, you know, it's a kind of spending that you've been critical of in the past, I imagine. And does this change your perspective on that and to some degree?
Well, I think it's been a wake-up call and an education for, again, there's not a criticism of any individual or group or whatever per se. I think we've all learned a lot in this situation with, you know, you have others in the past that might point it out, but, you know, maybe you have to experience some of this to really get the gravity and get enough people shook up to make the decisions
In recent days, there's been a lot of talk about restarting the economy and getting people back to work. And certainly, I think you alluded to this earlier, it's easier during the campfire and the car fire to get people to wear a mask because it's something you can see, smell, and taste.
Also, you can see a limitation. You can see, you can visually see, okay, this looks like it's over with. It's not a hidden killer. It's not a hidden problem like this is. So I think a lot of it is what people see is going to what I think your question is that a lot of it is what people can see and feel and understand, and that is starting to be stretched to the limit here. When, for example, I know where there's a shoe store that's open right now, but then other things are restricted to not be able to, for people to raise vegetables in their garden, stuff like that. So that, the frustration comes in because it doesn't look like a consistent application of what's essential or what's not. And pretty soon people say, well, we don't really need government to decide what is essential. As long as we're doing the protocols, whatever you're doing, it should work, especially as we see this tired term of, flattening the curve. When it looks like we're on the other side of this curve now, or at it, near it, then, people want to see, they want things to start being opened up to them again. If you can go into the Target store, for example, and you got certain aisles, yes, you can go down. Other ones are blocked off. You go into a drug store, and they have all these photocopies of notices saying that you can't buy this Easter candy, but you can go buy something else. That's how they feel.
Well, Congressman, everybody wants things to get back to normal. The question is whether we can do that, without putting our lives at risk. What's your perspective on this?
What our country is doing right now is not really what we're about. The United States, the freedom that Americans have always enjoyed, doesn't look like this. I think everybody understands that there's a period of time to get through the crisis, but they see restrictions coming down the line where there's folks talking like, well, we're not going to let anybody go back to what normal was until everybody has a vaccine or has a social distancing is going to be the case for the next year and a half. People are not going to accept that. There's a lot of folks asking the question like, well, why is everybody isolating instead of either those that are the most vulnerable on age or on, particular health issues, or the ones that need to be isolated that already have it? Those are the ones that need to quarantine themselves for the period of time that's seen as proper. Why is everybody else dancing to this tune? That's being asked more and more. And as we get on the other side of this curve, more and more are going to demand that these things be loosened up back into normal. The federal government cannot possibly supply enough money to keep this going for very long. And the silly thing is, we had an opportunity for a bipartisan agreement here the other day just to kick another $250 billion in for helping keep these businesses afloat, which are paying their people. And that money ran out yesterday. And it's pathetic because we could come to an easy agreement on that portion without having to fight the fight on everything else, which Mitch McConnell was trying to put in place in the Senate over a week ago and ran on the rocks. So it's ridiculous in that sense, and people should be mad.
You're listening to special coverage from North State Public Radio. When we're back, we'll hear more from a conversation with NSPR's Mark Albert and Congressman Doug LaMalfa. Stay tuned. This is special coverage of the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Before the break, we were listening to an interview recorded Thursday between NSPR's Mark Albert and Republican Congressman Doug LaMalfa, representative for California's 1st District. Let's get back to the conversation.
What kind of additional help could or should be made available to people facing monthly bills who are barred from earning an income because of the virus?
Well, how much red ink do you want to use in Washington, D.C., right?
Right, but if it doesn't abate millions of people losing their homes and winding up out on the street.
Yeah, well, you know, measures are being put in place to defer mortgage payments and defer a lot of things and pick it up on the back end, you know. So I think our financial institutions have been shown a willingness and given in ways to do that. So if you can put that on the back end of your mortgage without having a double whammy or big balloon payment, for example, that can be worked out. You know, they got to be whole on the interest and all that. So there's willingness to do that. But to think we can keep reaching into the red ink barrel in the U.S. Treasury at some point is looking irresponsible. That said, in the short term, we need to keep doing things to get through this, hopefully on the other side of this, you know, tired curve. And so I hope we can come together and quickly agree on this $251 billion that President and Leader McConnell and the Senate had been hammering out and get this out the door. Because, you know, my businesses that are calling me here in the district are going, look, the well has gone dry and I got to figure out how to get through this next month, as you mentioned here. So we got to come together on this. And I'm a little disappointed that they don't want Congress to somehow take actions again before May 4th. There's going to be a lot of things dying on the vine before that. So it's really highly frustrating that we see a lot more division and consternation instead of like, all right, let's just do the easy part. Let's do the slam dunk. Let's do this $250 billion and get this into SBA to distribute through Paycheck Protection, the EIDL program, and whatever works. And that has me so frustrated this whole week so far.
Congressman LaMalfa, should the same protections be put in, or the same ability to postpone to the back end or recalculate for someone who rents property rather than owns it?
Yeah, that's a different financial structure for that, and I wouldn't presume to be telling them how to do their business. You know, they got to make payments just like anybody else. So I think finding a way to finesse that in the middle. But again, we do have the ability with the various programs that have come out of this this CARES Act legislation to help them bridge that with federal money as well. You know, on employees, if they keep their employees, it ends up being a grant. On these other things, these are loans. And with interest rates thankfully being so low, they can even be basically 0% loans. And so I think folks are willing to make that up on the back end, even on things like rent, if the federal government can get its job done and come together on how it's going to fund that. That's what we need to be doing. That's what we need to be, you know, getting Speaker Pelosi. And I'm not here to, again, badmouth or point fingers at any of this stuff, but we have to come together on that. And we need her to get the message like, look, we can do an easy bill. We can do a simple bill. We can probably do it by a voice vote, maybe even by, you know, not showing up like was trying to happen before, which really scares me. But, you know, if it can be unanimous consent on something like that, since the pattern's been set, okay, we can work with that. But let's do something that is going to be effectively helping us bridge this next few weeks. But I really hope we get the lights turned on by Cinco de Mayo or something here. And so every day it goes by, we get a little more information on the on how the numbers are increasing or decreasing on that. You know, the original estimates were much, much higher than what is actually coming into place as far as the infections and the people that might be carriers but don't have symptoms, and even the potential on death. So is it a combination of social distancing? Is it a combination of travel bans? Is it a combination of maybe things being overestimated? And I think there's a little of all three there that have come into play. You know, so if the devastation was overestimated, then we need to adjust for that. The way we're living is not what we're about. We have got to get going again. So I'm hoping for, looking for this to happen in the short term and still do the things that are proper in the meantime. I want a normal school year for the kids next fall, not, you know, I think the governor's talking about some pretty extreme things that
I don't think the American people are going to go for at a point. And if you make them too angry, then they start just defying all of it, and then you have a big problem. So we have to find that balance. Part of it is listening to them, even if it isn't always perfect on the protocol side. You know, sometimes you have to adjust to where the people's mindset is, too.
Would you have any general comments about the high demand for PPE and efforts to ration by hospitals and government at different levels to assure that at least there's a limited supply available if this thing really blows up? There's been a lot of concern as to whether or not frontline medical workers are being told to reuse and to keep using and not change out of the PPE because trying to hold on to them and make sure that they don't run out. And at the same time, it increases the risk on one hand. I mean, it's a real trade-off.
It is. And it's really about protecting the workers at that point, because you got people coming in with symptoms or what have you. We're all hoping and we're all pushing, and we've seen some amazing things happen with industries that have changed what they produce to be able to step into making the hand washing material or the face mask, or, you know, the automakers doing the ventilators. You know, they're trying to come forward on that. You know, the president had to grab 3M by the scruff and get them straightened out a little bit to, keep producing the stuff for our domestic use instead of making the highest bidder. So we just have to continue to keep ramping that up. It is kind of rational, as you say. Like, you know, there's a lot of say, we need more testing. Well, yes, but the testing needs to be focused, since there's minimum, not unlimited time and unlimited ability to handle all tests. You need to categorize by the most important practical need for the test. So that would be the healthcare workers. It would be those that are showing the symptoms so they can be properly categorized. But for every person to have a test just on a whim, when the tests aren't available, then that isn't really as practical of an application. But, you know, again, each few days you hear about a new way that they've modified or come up with a test that is faster, more accurate, less cost. All those things are all important.
Congressman Lamalfa, President Trump just the other day expressed some displeasure about the World Health Organization and how they're handling the crisis, and said he was going to cut off the U.S. contribution for that organization. You issued a tweet praising the president's actions, and I was hoping I could have you elaborate on that.
Yes, the WHO, a lot of times, like the UN, has not been very friendly towards the truth as far as what the United States needs. And if it looks like they're just a vassal of China and the Chinese Communist Party and the propaganda they're putting out, then that's not helpful to us. So, you know, it's been supported in the past, and I think we've, you know, had mixed feelings about it, but we've gone along. And this lately has not been helpful. And indeed, when it starts to become political, then we have a lot of ways we can spend $400 million directly helping in our own country or entities globally that are going to play it straight. And that organization hasn't been doing so lately. They've been too closely tied to what China's doing and what China's goals are, which have been pretty nefarious.
In the middle of a global crisis, you know, can you punish a global organization by withholding money into getting them to do a better job?
Well, is it really punishment, or is it the best use of resources? Because at this point, you know, they've already have what they have in the pipeline. Sending new money on top of it, you know, they've already gone the direction they're going to go. They already have things in motion that they're doing in the pipeline, whether it's supplies or information or whatever. This is almost in a way saying, like, well, you haven't been very reliable. This is future money. We're not going to do with you anymore, because in the next few weeks, couple of months, whatever, this crisis will have largely dissipated, and WHO isn't really going to have a lot of use as far as COVID as just executing and modifying the plans each nation is doing anyway. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to be educated on what to do. It doesn't have to be vested in that organization, which has proven to be unreliable.
Congressman Lamalfa, at this point, I want to ask if there's anything you want to add, or if there are any good questions I should have asked and haven't.
I guess a question to ask is, why is there such a problem with hydroxychloroquine? Why did that become such a political football? We passed a bill a year and a half or so ago called Right to Try, and it's in the spirit of that, but those are experimental drugs that have not been completely vetted or approved, but people that are in a deathbed situation, say, hey, let's give it a shot. You know, maybe it'll save me. Maybe it'll extend my life, or maybe at the very least you can learn something from this that's going to help someone else. This isn't even that level. This is a level of it's an approved drug. Let's try it where appropriate. Again, under the supervision of medical professionals that would say, is this going to work or be harmful to this person? And in a lot of cases, we've seen a lot of great help. That's just a mystery between this and what we've seen with a lot of the media communications surrounding this whole deal. And that's kind of sad. But I don't know why there was just the almost violent behavior about it. I guess this my closing thought would be is that we've done pretty darn good as a society with following the guidelines. You know, you have your outliers there that people are still standing in line, not playing right. People are patient if they think it's right. But when it goes too far, you know, a lot of people up in arms over taking fishing rights away. Now, you know, we've talked to some folks in that. It looks like they're going to keep it very limited to some certain areas, actually certain counties that have asked for that because they don't want an influx of people coming from somewhere else, bringing it with them, overwhelming their facilities or the lack of hotels and restaurants. And when you explain that to them, people, okay, I get it. They're not a ban on, there's not a statewide ban on fishing. It's limited. It's a delay, whatever. So people are willing to be reasonable on that if you explain it to them, but not letting somebody put their boat on the lake or, you know, not being able to drive from one residence to another like's going on in Michigan, people will push back. So reasonableness and explaining to people clearly in detail and truthfully is going to be the best solution here getting through it, and not draconian measures, because what it looks like Sacramento is thinking up, I think, is going to be very unpalatable to people, you know, in the fall and for the next year, year and a half. So we can't go to the extreme on this. People want their freedom. People want to be normal, even with maybe some narrow limitations, but not what's being talked about, I think, to the extreme. So Congress, I'm just hoping and pushing that we can get back to work and get some more of the short-term stuff needed to help our businesses, which is who are helping their employees to get through this crisis fiscally themselves. That's extremely important. Damaging or blowing up our economy is just as mentally and fiscally harmful to a lot of folks. So, you know, there's a lot of high emotions about that, and it's going to come to a boiling point if things don't start looking like a solution and an endpoint.
That was Congressman Doug LaMalfa, representative for California's 1st District, speaking with NSPR's Mark Albert. And that is your program. If you have thoughts for us, leave them on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. Today's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, Andre Bayek, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, news director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. Tune in each weekday evening at 6:30 or catch the rebroadcast the following morning at 8:30. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned to North State Public Radio.